Okay, we're done.
And Gary, would you mind pulling down the share screen for a second?
Yeah, I don't mind at all.
I want to just.
I don't mind. As soon as I figure out what I'm doing. There we go.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I'm frozen. There we go. Okay, I'm back.
Sorry about that.
I froze up there for a second. Why don't we begin with introductions? And I'll just try to call on people as I see fit. And Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramos, Chair of Deed this year. We'll go to, or maybe we'll try something new. Maybe the next guy, the next person can go can tag the next person. So I'll go to Mr. Odrin. Make it a fun game here.
All right, cool. Mike Odrin, Olson Engineering. And I will go next to, well, I don't see anybody else. Seth. There we go, Seth.
Seth Hawley with AKS Engineering, and I'll tag Sherry.
Hi, Sherry Jones with Southwest Washington Contractors Association. And I guess I'll tag Andrew because he just got here. Hi, Andrew. Maybe he doesn't have audio yet.
No, he doesn't know what we're doing. Andrew, we're introducing ourselves and then tagging the next person from Deed that we see. Andrew?
He's on mute.
All right.
Maybe Jeff?
Yeah, we'll go to Jeff.
We'll go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah. Jeff Riston, Kingston Homes.
And Jeff will select Andrew.
Yeah. I see Seth, Sherry.
Okay, well, Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering, is there. So I'll move on to staff now. Brent, I'll tag you next.
Brent Davis, Community Development D Coordinator. And I'll tag April.
April Firth, Director of Community Development, and I see Oliver.
Yes, this is Oliver, Community Planning Director, so welcome everyone. I will direct to, if I can, Jackie.
I knew that was coming. Hi, everybody. I'm Jackie Camp with Community Planning, and I'll just keep the community planning spirit alive here. Go Jenna.
Jenna Kay with Community Planning, and Gary.
Gary Albright with Clark County Public Works, Long Range Transportation Planner, and Susan Ellinger.
Hi, everybody. Susan Ellinger with Community Planning. I will tag Rod Swanson.
Hi, Rod Swanson, Clark County Public Works. And I think Ali is still left.
Mm-hmm. Ali Safai, Development Engineering. And I'll go with Ted Venegas. Hi, Ted. going to Jennifer.
Hi, everybody. This is Ted. Oh, okay. Ted Benegas, Land Use Review Manager. I'm not sure who's left.
Jennifer.
Jennifer Reynolds.
Jennifer. There. Yeah, we'll go Jennifer.
We needed rehearsal for this play.
So Jennifer's not getting on, so we know she's there with Public Works, so we'll do Jody next.
With Community Development, sorry.
Go ahead, Jody.
Hello, I'm Jody Creamer with Community Development.
Okay, and then
Brandy.
Brandy McElrath, I'm with Quail Homes.
Okay, did we miss anybody that's online today? Okay, hearing none. This is a reminder that the DEEB meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted to the DEEB meeting website. The next item is to review and adopt the minutes. Mr. Odrin.
Sorry, I was on mute. I have reviewed, I don't have any edits, and move for approval.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, seconded by Mr. Riston. Any further discussion? Hearing none, call the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay, minutes are adopted. Thank you. Brent, upcoming events.
Brent, you're muted.
Okay, sorry about that. As far as council goes, April 19th, there's public hearing, annual reviews for the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan and the 179th Street Access and Management Circulation Plan. On the 20th, they have a work session on the county stream health report. Planning Commission, no work sessions coming up before the next DEEB meeting, and they have a public hearing on April 21st on the housing option study and action plan. That's it.
Okay. Are there any questions for Brent on that?
Brent,
okay,
this
hearing
is,
none.
Jamie, this is Oliver.
Yeah,
I
Oliver.
Don't know if Brent mentioned that we have the buildable lands report in front of the council on the 19th.
Thank you, Oliver. I was going to mention that. So that'll be the 19th at 6 o'clock after, I think, the hearing items on the annual reviews. Is there any DEEB member announcements?
I have one, Jamie, with regard to development engineering, the alternative final engineering review process, which is a developer certification. It was adopted 10 years ago, and it was only, I guess, in effect for a year, and it was supposed to be reevaluated after some projects ran through it. Nobody ended up going through it, and so I think it was brought up recently, but that process has actually basically expired. So currently the county doesn't have any alternative or streamlined review processes for that.
Okay. Good to know. And have you told that to Public Works or, I mean, Susan, they know?
Yeah,
I guess I had a
Yeah, I'm engineering. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, we are aware of it. But again, I'm not sure what kind of a process it would take. The original one was kind of blessed by the council, not as a resolution or just a, you know, kind of a pilot process. And it needs to be, I think, presented again. And whether it has to go to the council or not, I'm not sure. Actually, it was the commissioner system at the time. So I'm not sure, maybe the county manager would have the authority, but it's something maybe April and also Jennifer can follow up with.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And Seth, maybe you can follow up with Jennifer and April about that, and maybe we can put it on the agenda for next month as a topic item if we need to pursue something more formally with the council.
Sure. I'd also suggest that maybe Deeb take a closer look at what it is in that the previous program, because I think it was examined by several engineers and developers, and the way it was structured, it wasn't very desirable and that's likely why it was never utilized. So I think it doesn't make much sense to just readopt the same process, but rather look at maybe, is there an alternative streamlined process that we can put into place?
Okay, that's great. Eric, I saw that you joined us. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yep. Eric Galimo, SGA Engineering.
Thank you. The other Deeb member announcements, I have a couple. One is Terry will probably be joining us, but his reappointment hasn't been effectuated yet, I don't believe, until next week. So to the extent that we take any voting action, he'll have to abstain. But I did allow him to participate as normal as a candidate in waiting, I guess. So item number one. Item number two, I hope that staff didn't take too great of offense at my tone at the council presentation a couple weeks ago. I think we were just sort of reflecting some of our frustrations, and I think a lot of it has to do with the nature of COVID and not being able to meet in person and do that. So I did follow up directly with most of the council members to just reflect that, and again just to reiterate that, you know, we feel that Deeb has a very excellent working relationship with staff, and so for what it's worth. To that end, I would like to see what the possibility of getting us back into the same room would be for next month's meeting. I don't know what the protocols for that would be to do it in person. I know that the governor has dropped the mask mandate and people are out there meeting all around the town, and restaurants are full. And so I don't see why there's any reason necessarily that we can't move back to in person. So I wanted to throw that out there to the Deeb members for discussion.
But either way, it'd be nice to see everybody in person again, but I think that's going to depend on whether the building is open back up. And I know that I think that they're still requiring masks, like when you go to the second floor, the shared lobby for the assessor's office and such. Is that still the case?
I believe that it is up to the individual if they want to, but I don't believe we are requiring it in the building. I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure not.
I thought that the buildings had opened back up. It's the mask mandate's in place for transportation and like hospital settings. I don't believe it is anywhere else.
And the council is also going to a hybrid format and having in-person hearings. Public hearings. So I think we can probably follow along that model. So I'll look into getting the training room booked and try to see if we can get it booked on a regular basis from this point forward. And in addition to that, we will probably need to have the ability to allow people to interact remotely, particularly staff. That's current county policy to allow staff to participate remotely if they choose to.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I was going to make sure, Brent, that we make sure that we had the technical capability to do that, because I do understand that some county staff are still given that ability, and I'm assuming that some Deeb members may still want that option as well. And I think that the world of the future will probably be a hybrid situation, so we might as well get used to it. But
yeah,
We
should be able to run Teams in the training room. I just need to make sure we can get the camera system connected into it so the remote participants can see what's going on in the room.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I would really look forward to it. I haven't seen many of you people in person for more than 2 years, and nothing would be better to shake some hands and see some smiling faces. So would make my year. With that, we'll be turning to the next item on the agenda, the housing options study and action plan. We'll turn that over to Jackie.
Thanks, Jamie. This is Jackie Camp with Clark County Community Planning. I'm here. We wanted to check back in with Deeb in advance of the upcoming legislative process that we're in place right now. I think the last time we were here was in February, or to meet with you was February. So at that point, the project advisory group had completed their final recommendations for the draft housing option study and action plan. And since then, we've been putting everything together into one document called the Housing Option Study and Action Plan. So it includes all of the background research and work that was done to assist the advisory group with developing the recommendations. So all that background, the stakeholder interview process, the audit on the our policies and code, the housing needs and analysis report that was done by Echo Northwest, and additional other materials that are part of what we call the study. And then the action plan includes the list of strategies categorized under housing options, affordable housing, programs and partnerships, and then advocacy. And I think the last time we talked, you know, we talked through some strategies. I don't have a presentation this today. I hope you all have received the link to the document and the appendices online. The Planning Commission had a work session last Thursday. We went through every strategy that we have, which is 50. So if anyone's interested in kind of listening in, that audio is posted to the Planning Commission webpage. And then next Thursday is the hearing for the Planning Commission. Wanted just to give you some just kind of insight about some details that maybe we didn't talk about last time that you'll see in the document itself. So we have a what we call in the implementation matrix, which lists all the strategies and then identifies the timeline that would take that we think would take to accomplish it, whether or not it's an administrative function. So it's something that the council could direct staff to do that's an administrative item versus a legislative item that would then need to go through another type four type of process, meaning, you know, through the Planning Commission and the County Council for adoption. So typically our code changes, as well as what each strategy, how it impacts low and moderate or moderate middle income households. So you'll see a table there that kind of has those indicators, as well as the effort it would take if it's kind of a short or small or to large effort to implement. So what, as you know, all of the strategies in the action plan are purely recommendations only. They will require direction by county council to move forward with any implementation. And what we're asking of the Planning Commission and of ultimately county council is, you know, approval of the work that was completed on the action plan, but also to direct us to move forward with implementing at the very least the considering the short-term strategies to keep the ball rolling and get moving on those immediately. So that's kind of what our approach is for these upcoming hearings. The other thing I wanted to mention that we didn't probably get too detailed on with you all is what the monitoring program that we're proposing in the plan. So kind of two parts. One is the monitoring of establishing a monitoring for the strategies that are implemented so that as part of that implementation, we can assess and see how those strategies that are implemented are making an impact or not, and whether or not we need to make adjustments for the goal of allowing or encouraging more housing types. And then the second part of the monitoring program is the monitoring of the plan itself. So the proposal is to, as part of community planning, I don't know if you all are aware, but we, our work program is approved by council every year. And we go before them and have a discussion about what our next year list of projects and things that they want to accomplish. And we're proposing as part of that monitoring program is an update on the, you know, the work of the action plan thus far, and then a discussion on what strategies we should start working on next to kind of keep it at the forefront and keep that conversation and the the implementation of the strategies moving along. So you can see all kind of details about that in the action plan itself. Let's see, what else did I want to make sure I covered? As you know, please come and provide testimony if you like at the Planning Commission, or of course, submitting written testimony. We'll make sure we get that to the Planning Commission and be part of the record. And of course, once we have the county council meetings. So we're scheduled to go to the county council at a work session on May the 4th. And then we're scheduled for the hearing on May 17th. So I'm going to stop there. I'm going to see if any of my co-planners, Jenna or Susan, see and Oliver, if I missed anything or if there's anything else that we want to make sure that we share regarding this upcoming process. And then we're happy to answer any questions. I just want to make sure I covered everything that we wanted to make sure we told you. Okay, I guess I got it all. So,
Jackie, this is Oliver. Yeah. You covered it very well. And I think what I will only add is if Deep have reviewed the report and has any comment, suggestions, we will welcome that. You can present that to Jackie or submit that to the Planning Commission, because that is the first step before we go to council.
We do have comments, and can I share the screen? Let's see.
Yeah, I think there's a button up there in the corner, Eric.
Okay, let me see if I can.
If I had to leave.
Yeah, right next to your leave.
Are you able to see this here?
Yes.
Okay, so this has not been sent in to you, the county yet. This has been circulated to the D members. And the idea was that they were going to review them and we could adopt them hopefully today. So I know Mike sent some comments in saying they looked good, but there are some significant items I think we brought up in here and some potential unintended consequences. So what we did was we did review the document. I think it was the Clark County Housing Study and Action Plan, the most current one posted. And then our comments kind of address the points like HO1, reducing the minimum lot size for existing permitted housing types. So there's a few things that I think may be missing. And, you know, some of the concept, one of the biggest ones I see is by not increasing the maximum lot coverage, when you do decrease lot size, by nature, you increase the lot coverage. So if you don't increase the lot coverage with changing the size, you don't get a feasible product. You don't get one that's actually, feasible to construct. So that, I think, is a pretty significant comment. I just want to go over a few of these. The D board does have it. Some of the things that, let's see. I don't want to read all of these, but we will get these over to the county and hopefully Planning Commission before their hearing next Thursday. So there are also quite a few comments regarding cottage housing that we've ran into, and some of those weren't incorporated in the draft. So one of the big one is the garage. It was never intended to include the garage space in those thresholds. Even when we went through examples, I have we went through that code with staff. We were including all the examples we were looking at included the garage in that square footage. And I think it was an unintended consequence what came up when the garages were included in that area and had to be subtracted out. It made a product that was not marketable. And because of that, we're not seeing as many cottage projects come through. A lot of them have been halted or are approved, waiting for this to get cleared up. So this is a great opportunity to clear this up. Another thing too is when you look at doing smaller product, the height sometimes increases, especially if you're on sites with any slope at all, where you may end up with a garage under, you walk up to your main floor, and then you have living space above. But when you decrease the footprint, having things in there that say that it has to be limited to 25 feet when other structures in the area can be 35, we may have more than ever a reason to increase the height. Let's see, there was some comments about open space that we brought up at a previous DEEB meeting. So we're kind of just summarizing those on our options. So that will be on there. And at the end of the document here, we also comment on a few things that we strongly like wanted to compliment the committee and staff on that actually will make a big difference. So we wanted to kind of stress those. So it's not all, you know, comments about the code. It's like, hey, this is a great idea. Glad it was included. Let's, you know, and we can expand on some of those. So we have reviewed it. We have comments. It was circulated out to the DEEB. And I guess we're looking at any comments that you guys may have. So.
Thank you so much. So yes, definitely send those along when you're ready, and we'll get them to the Planning Commission. And if you want to repackage them for the council, I would suggest doing so. And one thing I forgot to mention that I'm glad you brought that up is that, you know, as I mentioned, that these are recommendations only. They're not totally all vetted and ready to go. So the next step, once council directs us to implement, we're going to have to go back and look more closely at these specifics, right? And that's when we will definitely come to DEEB and discuss kind of more specifics on the options for how we can implement it. So it's great to have this ready to go, and we'll definitely make that part of, you know, the conversations when we if they're directing us to implement.
Okay. So
that was one of my questions. Yep. Go ahead, Eric.
Oh no, hoping to maybe have this kind of finalized today or in the next few days so we can get it out to you guys.
I just had a process question, Jackie. If on the fourth, because I know that the council's been kept abreast of this throughout the process, but if the Planning Commission goes in there and recommends changes, and staff also listens to what Deeb's commenting on there, on May 4th, would you anticipate then getting feedback from the council that may change between then and the 17th? What's the contingency there, I guess?
To change strategies or something that's in the plan?
Well, maybe to add strategies or modify ones that are proposed, so on and so forth.
Well, I guess, and Oliver, please chime in, but kind of how we see is this is like a plan, right? It's recommendations that they're all going to need some more refinement. There's nothing in here that we could take and be like, okay, we're going to write the code now. There's going to be some more analysis and discussing with stakeholders the best way to do it. That's kind of that's our viewpoint, is that this was a list of recommended strategies from the advisory group as ideas to consider, not that you have to implement them, or there may be something else that you want to implement, but it gets the conversation started and to allow council to then give direction. So I guess if there was a strategy that not necessarily was specific in the plan, I would assume council could have still, of course, say, all right, maybe you all didn't get specific on it in the plan, but I still want you to do this, as they always can. They can always direct staff to work on whatever it is that they have, they want to get accomplished. So, Oliver, I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that or make sure I explained it correctly.
No, you did. And like you said, this is like any other project, and members of the DEEB is aware, this is a recommendation coming out of the advisory committee or group. And there will be opportunities for refinement, and there will be opportunity. We don't know what will come out of the PC, and they will typically will consider the comments and make recommendation that the council consider them. Like any other project, we don't want this to be put on the shelf, if you will. But it's likely that the council, if you take, for example, the short-term strategies, which could be just the low-hanging fruit, some of the recommendations that is coming out of DEEP, our anticipation is that the council hopefully will direct staff to work on those short-term items as quickly as possible, or even start that this year. As Jackie indicated, that will entail working with DEEP, coming back to DEEP, engaging other stakeholders and refining that. That may be Title 40 type of work that we will come back and make sure that we are getting it right and refining it as we go through. So that's what I'm anticipating will happen. I hope that answered your question.
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Welcome, sir.
Okay. Anybody else? Questions for Jackie or the team? Going once, going twice. Okay. Thank you. Eric, would you mind pulling down the screen there? Because I do believe Gary's got a presentation. So next up will be Gary Albrecht with a presentation on the draft transportation system plan, the TSP.
Thank you, Jamie. Let me pull it up.
Before we move on to the next one, did we want to touch on our recommendations here? Kind of time is of the essence on this, so we would need to get this submitted prior to next Thursday.
Yeah, do we have a quorum? Yes, we do. So I'll entertain a motion. I know we've had some back and forth behind the scenes on it. I'm good with it if somebody wants to make a motion.
I would move that we present or we submit the DEEB recommendations as drafted by Eric to the county for inclusion into the county's presentation of the housing study for both Planning Commission and upcoming council hearings.
I will always follow Mike's lead. I second.
Jeff with the dutiful second. Okay. Any additional discussion with that? Signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. That will be sent forward. Okay. Gary, now you're up and you have control.
Okay, thank you. Let me get this back up. All right, well, thank you. So Gary Albright, Clark County Public Works, Transportation Planning. So we're here to discuss our transportation system plan. We started working on this plan in 2020. The transportation system plan will help Clark County Council make transportation decisions. The TSP closes the gap between policy decisions and implementation. It will provide a snapshot of the existing system, immediate changes, and future plans. So our staff members, myself, Rob Klug, our county engineer, Brian Vincent, the interim transportation division manager, Michael Salas. He's not with me today, but he's been helping with the development of the TSP. Kaylee McClacken Burton, she's our interim manager, community engagement and inclusion. And Cindy Gonzalez is our communication specialist. Matt Herman has been helpful in creating this transportation system plan as well, but he's no longer with the county. He took a job working with a company so he can do transportation economic development with the railroad. So that's where Matt is.
Wow.
We missed greatly. So I have I've got a couple slides on Microsoft Teams, and I'm fine if you guys just want to ask questions as we go instead of raising hands and going through this formal process. But through Microsoft Teams, there is ability to add closed caption options if you want to. So each individual viewer has the ability to do this. So here's some quick directions on how to do that. The TSP's goal is to bridge the transportation policies enacted in the comprehensive plan and the transportation element projects that we build. The Growth Management Act requires Clark County to have a comprehensive growth management plan, but it doesn't require a transportation system plan. So what we're trying to do is bridge several documents that we have that have transportation components. We've got the Arterial Atlas, the 20-year capital facility plan, the 6-year transportation improvement program, the transportation safety management plan, and bicycle pedestrian master plan. And there are other plans that affect transportation, the parks and recreation open space, and the comprehensive plans land use element. So there's a saying in transportation industry that the best transportation plan is a land use plan. Here's a quick background. Everyone has seen this before, pretty much. It's Clark County, a bunch of people living here. We'll move on to the next one. This slide shows the breakdown of transportation infrastructure under our immediate jurisdiction. Arterials are streets serving regional traffic. Collectors connect regional traffic to commercial, industrial, and residential communities. Local streets directly serve access to properties. You can see we have roughly the equivalent mileage of roads in the urban area compared to the rural area. The major roads in the rural area that we have are classified as collectors, while the urban area predominates are rural local roads. So the map on the right of the slideshow shows the average daily volumes, with blue denoting the lower volume, of roads, and orange are the higher volumes of roads. They're pretty much where we'd expect to see the arterials and collectors. So this chart shows the age profiles for 2015 and the projections for 2035. As you can see from this chart, we are planning on a greater percentage of our population being elderly 65 or 65 plus. As we age, public transportation through CTRAN can reduce social isolation and enhance individual autonomy and well-being. Sidewalks help improve health and improve mobility for all users. And I'm not going to get into the details of this slide. It's just kind of an overall of trips we're looking at. So the chart on the right side shows trips in Clark County and the trips across the Cowlitz or Skamania County going into Oregon. And the chart on the left compares the 2015 population to the 2035 population, showing the reason of the trips of why people travel. So in both charts, the percentages of trips are increasing. The pie chart, that's the best way to show transportation is through pie charts. So hopefully they see some humor in our pie chart. This pie chart shows us that predominant way in which Clark County residents get to work is by driving alone. The data is from 2018, from a 2018 timeframe. So we would expect the 2000 data to show a huge increase for those working from home. It will be interesting to see if future data, if there's a significant permanent shift to working from home. But for our work moving forward, this chart sets our baseline. So Rob Klug originally had included this slide, so I'm going to do my best attempt to impersonate Rob Klug. So he likes to say this is a psychology Rorschach test. So and I'm supposed to tell you what it is you're looking at. So the data. So we've got 39 permanent count stations in the unincorporated Clark County on arterial roads, and this chart shows trip counts for 2020 using a segment of 78th Street near Kingsway Christian Schools. So it's the 78th Street is a 4-lane principal arterial designed to accommodate less than 24,000 vehicles per day. The data shows us that around 11,000 vehicles per day in both directions, totaling 22,000 vehicles per day, are on this spot. As we implement the TSP, we will be monitoring these issues because they will directly affect the transportation system. Most importantly, the next update to the comp plan may have a huge impact on our transportation needs for future growth. The transportation element of the comprehensive plan is our guiding document for the TSP. It connects the capital facilities plan, the 20-year plan, to the 6-year transportation improvement program and our implementation practices. And you can see from this slide that our TSP will be interactive. So the workflow goes in both directions. It goes to the from the transportation element over to the capital facility plan, and the TIP and our implementation practices, meaning the development code and our standards. So we're attempting to put all of these different components into one document so we can see how the big picture works. Transportation policies that seek to provide for the mobility of people and goods must consider increases in travel demand caused by growth in population and employment. The transportation system must be affordable and minimize environmental impacts to maintain the quality of life. A safe, efficient transportation system can work to enhance economic development within a region in conjunction with supportive land use plans. RTC has a computerized model to project future traffic volumes based on the proposed land use patterns. This study for analysis of future conditions is 2035. Base conditions for the 2024 analysis scenario consisted of funding or committed transportation projects, the 2035 population and employment forecast. Future deficiencies in the transportation system are defined in the comprehensive plan, which are included in the 20-year capital facility plan. And that's what we'll have in our transportation system plan as far as the funding package goes. And a TSP provides direct guidance on how to build, operate, and maintain Clark County's major roadway network. It's treating transportation system as a whole body, addresses larger transportation system, including transit, multi-use trails, state highways, and freight railroads maintained by other entities. Clark County policies play a role in the projects that get moved from a 20-year CFP into the 6-year TIP. Council sets the priority of the goals in the TIP evaluation, and each project in the CFP is ranked according to its priority. Safety projects are our number one priority, which is consistent across local, state, and federal agencies. Economic development is number two for supporting our land use and growth. Financial viability is the ability for a project to leverage multiple grants. Here's a historical list of the top projects ranked in the TIP each year. Many of the projects, especially the 119th Street corridor, were such big projects that they took many years to complete. But as you can see, if the top project isn't a safety project, it's one that promotes economic development by implementing the comp plan. We have created a public participation plan that was adopted by Clark County Council on March 2nd, 2021. Here are a few of the stakeholder groups that the TSP will be shared with. This slide covers the overarching umbrella of public input. The sounding board informs staff with diverse perspectives and comprehensive plan problem identification. The staff team presents information to the Planning Commission. The PC makes recommendations to the County Council for final decisions. We will be seeking input from other established county advisory committees. However, this slide shows Growth Management Act requirements for adoption. Our sounding board members were chosen from already established appointed committee members. We had seven members from these stakeholder groups. The sounding board met 9 times over the last year. Clark County's Comprehensive Growth Management Plan transportation element contains 6 transportation goals that guides the development of the TSP. These are hot links too, by the way. So if you have access to the plan, then you'll be able to see the sounding board. They're listed, they're included on our Public Works Transportation webpage for the TSP. We grouped the sounding board recommendation into the following bullet points. As we move through the recommendations, I will go over the related transportation goal, current practices, and recommendations. The goal is to develop a regionally coordinated transportation system that supports and is consistent with the adopted land use plan. Current practices connect county and city policies and comprehensive plans together. We coordinate with our local and regional partners through RTC. Sounding board feedback, access to parks. Neighborhood parks continue to support no public parking, but provide ADA parking drop-off areas for residents with mobility needs. Offer multiple access locations for pedestrians and bicycles. For neighborhood transportation, evaluate amending parking requirements. Consider eliminating parking requirements based on land use types and substitute and institute performance-based parking management. Envision parking as a collective rather than on-street and off-street separately. Institute a neighborhood traffic management program that responds to resident concerns and implement solutions. And we're in the process of doing that right now. For regional transportation, improved bi-state coordination could occur to develop regional solutions in Washington and Oregon. Bus system needs to be coordinated between Washington and Oregon to provide improved connections for people traveling at night. There's a definitely noticeable difference in the infrastructure among jurisdictions, most apparent in the rural and urban areas. And level of service standards should be close as possible to account for annexation, development review, and system improvements. It's desirable to have consistency between jurisdictions, but they should be different for urban and rural roads. Oh, went too fast. There we go. Sorry. Recommended solution is to continue collaboration with our partners, improve regional transportation. Collaborate with CTRAN to forecast transit connections with bike and pedestrian network. Develop shared consistent methodologies for implementing intelligent transportation systems. Strengthen relationships with airports. Review truck freight corridor designations on current and future truck trip demand and the need to maintain connectivity between land use. Land uses that generate or receive significant truck trips and stay strategic freight corridors. This goal is to develop a multimodal transportation system. Current county code practices new construction require building sidewalks on both sides of all public streets in urban areas. Sidewalks on private roads in urban areas are not required on both sides of the street. Sidewalks are required to be constructed on both sides of the road in rural centers. Sidewalks are not required to be constructed in the rural area. Clark County has a sidewalk program, largely funded by the property tax-based county road fund, supplemented by occasional state or federal grants. And it's funded through the annual update of the Transportation Improvement Program. The Clark County Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan is a guiding document for the county. We've got 65 miles of existing bike lanes in the county. The funding has largely been directed towards new capital road projects, lacking the resources to retrofit existing streets with multimodal facilities. We need infrastructure for micromobility forms of transportation. And micromobility, you know, what we mean by that is electronic bikes, e-scooters, and electric skateboards. We don't really have infrastructure for micromobility. It's the feedback we've heard. So vehicle infrastructure, so they're supportive of studying, researching, and analyzing a multimodal level of service standard. Pedestrian safety, pedestrians choose a safer path rather than a convenient path. The curb heights to sidewalks need to be reduced to reduce pedestrian falls. Bikes on sidewalks create unsafe locations for pedestrians, and analyze crash data to find trends that help prioritize sidewalk connections. For vehicle infrastructure, the sounding board is supportive of the multimodal level service standard. For bicycle infrastructure, automated count stations need to be installed to capture bicycle data. Bike lane widths need to accommodate trikes, the three-wheel bicycles. And bicycle infrastructure needs to be designed for various riding abilities. And we've heard that bells on bicycles do not inform the deaf community that there may be a conflict with pedestrians. For CTRAN, for transit infrastructure, CTRAN bus ridership and service routes can be improved. The micromobility, we need infrastructure for that and some policies to accommodate how we interact with micromobility. Freight transportation, Shalachie Prairie Railroad needs to be prioritized, fix the railroad and street crossings to make it safe for trains, pedestrians, and vehicles. The recommended solutions, study and research, analyze and implement a multimodal level of service standard for urban unincorporated Clark County. Improve coordination with local airports and CTRAN to develop a transportation system that improves connections to transit, add signage on bikeway facilities for existing riders and potential riders. So this is a map from the Clark County Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan. It shows a recommended network, a sidewalk network. So the TSP is including this recommended in our transportation system plan. So and you're probably wondering why we would do that. So in talking with Chris Cook, our legal counsel, so we have an adopted bike pedestrian master plan, but the plan has a recommended network in it, which, and ask me, what does that mean? It means nothing. Because it's recommended, we have an adopted recommendation. So what we're doing is taking that same network and putting it inside of our transportation system plan as the recommended sidewalk projects. And we're going to do the same thing for the next maps. We've got the bikeways that are taken from the adopted bike pedestrian master plan. We'll have these same bikeway projects inside of the TSP. This goal is to optimize and preserve the investment in transportation system. The current practice with our traffic signals treats them as an integrated network rather than a collection of individual intersections. Clark County has nearly 100 cameras at signalized intersections, primarily in the urban area outside Vancouver city limits. The TIP has a road preservation program. Clark County Public Works sweeps residential streets during the fall, winter, and spring months. During the summer, street sweeps are primarily for summer road preservation and other construction projects. The feedback that we've heard on this goal is to build bikeways and sidewalks that promote active transportation. This encourages less driving, which could preserve the longevity of the current road infrastructure. Recommendation is to include continuing support Clark County Public Works operations and preservation programs to provide the residents with high quality infrastructure, analyze the cost of maintaining roads with all new infrastructure built to determine if the current maintenance funding levels are sustainable. The goal is to ensure mobility throughout the transportation system. Current county code practice measures for vehicle transportation rely on urban collectors and arterials, signalized intersections and unsignalized intersections where collectors and arterials meet. Mobility is measured on urban collectors and arterials based on a volume to capacity ratio. Volumes are continually collected on an annual basis. Capacity is determined based on the classification design standard. Non-motorized transportation modes are not measured for mobility. Mobility standards for local jurisdictions in Clark County vary, leading to inconsistent priority of the transportation projects. Overall congestion is not managed effectively. Road space does not seem adequate to accommodate all road users, including people walking and bicycling. Traffic signals provide varying levels of pedestrian service, meaning that the wait time differs between signals and intersections. Working with CTRAN to help improve bus ridership and service routes. There's support, I've said this multiple times, and I'll keep saying this, the sounding board is supportive of shifting to a multimodal level of service standard that replaces the volume to capacity for street segments and LOS intersections. Recommended solutions: implement a multimodal level of service standard to ensure mobility for all users, develop and further refine a neighborhood traffic management program, build networks for people walking and biking rather than as a component of a street project, enhance neighborhood communications to ensure support for building new sidewalk infrastructure, communicate directly with freight providers to ensure their needs are met. This goal is to provide a safe transportation system. Current practices with Clark County standard details provide for constructing various projects within the county. Clark County Code offers development standards for us to follow through Title 10, the vehicles and traffic, Title 12, the streets and roads, Title 40 with Unified Development Code. The Clark County Traffic Engineering Section has established a comprehensive safety program that is data-driven and follows AASHTO's Highway Safety Manual for the entire county. And these are hot links that are in here. So that we've got our traffic engineers have developed a pedestrian crossing treatment policy, school zone, traffic control policy, systematic safety improvement program, and the transportation safety management program. And these are good policies, good programs. If you haven't seen them, definitely worth spending some time getting familiar with them. The feedback we've heard is design a network improved for safe and convenient travel for people walking and bicycling, reduce sidewalk curb heights to minimize pedestrian falls, people biking and walking on a sidewalk create a feeling of unsafe condition. Analyze crash demographic data for people walking to help determine trends and identify sidewalk conditions. So recommended solutions: monitor and evaluate sites where systematic safety treatments and implement to measure and evaluate the effectiveness of recommended treatments. Implement the school zone signing and pavement parking policy recommendation and continue implementing the pedestrian crossing prioritization program and the safe systems approach. And I've shown this slide to everyone who's seen this presentation. So any of your concerns you have either with the road or with the speeding, so here's some information for you to contact. And that's it. I would love to hear your questions and comments.
I have a couple of questions, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Great presentation, Gary. Thank you. One of the main questions is, I didn't see, well, I'm trying to flip back to, the recommended solutions. Would this, or do you see this as, do you think that this would necessitate any changes to the standard transportation details that are currently adopted that we use from a design standpoint, construction standpoint, in order to meet any of these recommendations?
Well, you know, it all depends right now. So, you know, we've got our comprehensive plans that are tied to all the cities and RTC's regional transportation plan. So everything is in sync right now, and we're proposing to go a different direction, but we don't want to do that yet because Metro is in the process of updating the regional mobility policy. So they're looking at their travel demand model right now and trying to figure out ways to address performance measures for people biking and walking. And once they figure that out, and then RTC will adopt what they've done, and then it will have a trickle down effect and get to us. So it's a recommendation. It's like the housing action plan. There's nothing set in stone yet for us to say, this is what we're gonna do and we're gonna force everyone else to do it. Because we all have to work through this together. So this is just gonna lay out the pieces of what we have in place. Because I mean, we've got policies that say what we wanna do, but nothing's ever really clear on what we're doing. And you know, when I'll stop and listen.
No, that's okay. The reason why I'm asking is that this is a very high level program that you've just outlined here, and what I think us here are thinking about are how does that affect development? How does that affect our clients? How does that affect the ability, are we going to suddenly have to start having, you know, wider rights of way so that we can accommodate wider bike lanes or multimodal lanes, wider sidewalks, things of that nature? So that I think is maybe a concern, or at least something that's in the backs of our minds as we look at this and think, okay, well, yeah, these are all great ideas, and we understand that there's an emerging technology with regards to how you put it, micro mobility. I thought that was a great term there. And that whether or not the current design standards that are established for roadways in Clark County can ultimately accommodate what might come out of, you know, might trickle down and affect what would ultimately be constructed, and are we starting to take up more land for rights of way in order to accommodate those? So that's, I think, one concern at least that I had. I don't know if I won't speak for anybody else. The other question I had, though, was the multimodal level of service versus the volume to capacity. I think the volume to capacity has been, you know, we worked through that and got that established here in Clark County a while back, and it seems to have worked. And the concern here is that are we suddenly now going to fix something that's not necessarily broken? And two, how does that all work with like other jurisdictions that still use volume to capacity when you're talking about concurrency corridors and level of services at intersections?
Those are great questions. So, you know, there's always a flip side to everything. So something that appears to function correctly might work well for vehicles, but when you go to talk to a pedestrian or a person on a bike, it's like, it doesn't work so well. So when I go to walk across the street, why do I have to wait 3 minutes for all the cars to cross, so I get my turn to walk through the intersection? If it's a performance measure, it's like, well, we don't have data right now to capture any of that. So it's a long road for us to even get to the point to try to figure out, you know, what improvement we need to make. The goal would be is for us to establish some kind of count system. So we've got our traffic engineers that are working towards adding count information into the signals that we have. So existing infrastructure. So, and, you know, it's going to be a long process, and we definitely plan on working with the community on however this is going to fold out. We can't create something that's not going to work for the city of Vancouver or the city of Battleground or Camas or Washougal. It's like, we all need to have something similar that's going to work. So I can't imagine we're just going to get rid of the whole thing. We'll keep the volume to capacity and add some performance measures for pedestrians and bikes, and we'll call that a multimodal system. The details haven't been figured out, but that's kind of what we need in order to get to where we're going to grow. Is because we count cars, we do a great job of counting cars, and we know that. But we don't have the system in place to count, you know, people biking and people riding or people walking. So,
yeah, Mike is, you know, the DEEB representative, and, you know, Gary and, you know, Matt and the rest of the team of the county did a great job all this last past year with all the meetings, and that's reflective in this really excellent presentation that Gary gave here. I think I had some initial concerns similar to you, but, you know, the flip side of that too is, I think, as Gary had indicated, you know, there's not really any good data on people that are using other modes of transportation other than single, you know, occupancy vehicle. And so, you know, in theory, you know, maybe as more people bike and walk and use other modes of transportation, maybe that's a way also to reduce the impact on developers because they are using those other modes, whether that's, you know, reflected in the volume to capacity ratio in the data or some other method. I think that that'll come to fruition later down the road, no pun intended.
And we're not saying, you know, build more bike lanes because not everyone's comfortable riding a bike lane, you know, next to a 4,000 or 5,000 pound vehicle. So, and that's not the goal of this plan. Is you know, we want to provide more options for people, you know, maybe bike boulevard, more shared roads, identify shared road routes that would connect to a bike lane if someone wanted to ride a bike lane. It's a, you know, so we're just looking at this holistically instead of, you know, as a silo, kind of what we've done in the past. You know, the RTO Atlas has been so focused on cars. It's just done a great job. It's just trying to broaden it. So, you know, it's, you know, with the new bipartisan infrastructure law that came out from President Biden, it will offer more options to build multimodal travel. So we're trying to line up the county's policies so we're more in line with, you know, future grant opportunities.
And then the only other question that I had was, do you know of other similar jurisdictions that have implemented similar policies and maybe have, you know, some kind of proven track record that you can fall back on and recognize, you know, what's gone well and what hasn't? And because you guys have heard me say this for the last 10 years, you know, steal shamelessly from the best that other jurisdictions have to offer. So, you know, I don't know if you've reached out to other jurisdictions to see if they have something similar.
I have, you know, as far as a transportation system plan, it's not a requirement. And so not a lot of jurisdictions have them. Okay. City of Battleground just developed one. So they have some similar information in ours. And the City of Vancouver is working on updating theirs. I know up north, this City of Bellingham or Bellevue, they have a multimodal system that's, you know, that that they've created a and they use they have a funding package for theirs. I can't remember what I tend to block it out because it's not going to happen for us. you know, it would be creating a transportation benefit district.
Oh, I think.
And I don't want to suggest that, but I mean, I have seen other jurisdictions do similar things to help pay for, you know, in these multimodal options, but we're not there yet. So it's, you know, right now this is like a phase one of the TSP, and then as it develops and moves along, it would grow into something else. So when the comp plan is updated in 2025, so what, you know, we've got a lot of this transportation element. It's kind of the background of our TSP. So, you know, the thought is to take a lot of that information out and put it in the TSP. And bridge the two together so there's not a duplication of what we're doing. So it would be more, I can envision it more as, you know, we'd have our comp plan transportation element and then say see the TSP.
Gotcha.
So and that way everything is inside that, and it will be a GMA document. So we couldn't just go in there and change it because we didn't like two words or a sentence. It'd have to be the type four process where we go through the planning commission and the county council to make changes to it.
Okay. Those are the only questions I had. Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. Anybody else from DEEB have got questions? Seeing a lot of head shakes.
Yeah, Jamie, okay. I had one. Did I hear you correctly when you mentioned implementing that bike and pedestrian plan, which is currently just a recommendation? How does that play out?
Well, you know, it has not been played out very well because nothing's really been built. So that's part of the problem. It's all this stuff exists, but there's no real way to connect it to anything. So it has not been working well.
So I guess what you're proposing then is to implement it as a policy. Does that change it? Does it move it forward as far as available funding sources, or what's the change with that?
There still really aren't any funding sources yet identified. So, and that would, you know, that would have to happen in the future. So, you know, what I can see happening is after we adopt our transportation system plan, the state has an active transportation plan that they've been working on, and that is based on their regional bike pedestrian plan they have. So it's basically an update. So they repackaged it into an active transportation plan. And RTC is working on creating an active transportation plan. And I can see us going back and updating our bike and ped plan and calling it a transportation, an active transportation plan. So at that point, we would hopefully have funds to get a consultant to help figure out how we're going to fund this stuff and build it. You know, so I could repackage it. So it would just be the near term stuff, but how do you get the near term stuff built? And then the long term stuff? These are questions that I don't have answers to, but I have them. I have the same questions too.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
As always, nice job, Gary.
Thank you, yeah. Jeff.
Thank you, Gary.
It's okay. Been fun. Thank you. Thanks for letting me share this with you guys.
And would you mind doing a stop share there?
Nope, I will do that. So I've remoted into my computer and it's went to sleep.
We'll take a second. Well, in the meantime, while Gary's working on that, we'll move to the last item on the agenda today, the landscaping and recreation space update, and that will be for April and Mr. Odrin.
Thanks, Jamie. April, if you don't mind, I'll just go first and kind of give everybody an update. Last meeting, we had a discussion with regards to a few code sections that have come up recently that have received some various interpretations over the years. And I think, you know, and there were three items. One of them was the L1 standard with regards to having that apply to the interior of project sites. Second one was the width of recreational space. And the third was a separation of the required recreational space from the required on-site landscaping. April provided an initial interpretation of that back on March 29th, which we discussed. It really what it came down to was that the interior L1 standard only applies to the multifamily or the higher density residential zones. That the recreational space, so that's pretty clear. It's clear in code that's what it states. Minimum of 20% of the site shall be landscaped to an L1 standard. But that, and in my response back to her, it was I just wanted to get clarification, and I reviewed the code, and I didn't see anywhere that requirement applied in any of the other zones.
I found two, right, I found the same thing when looking at them. I found two that, you know, could have been interpreted that way, commercial and employment districts, but I believe that they should, that the L1 should only apply to the buffering on those cases. You could interpret it if you want to, but it's not as strong. So
great, yeah. Very good. That a minimum width was not required with regards to the recreational space. The 20-foot minimum width dimension. So that issue has been resolved also. So really what it comes down to is the county's current interpretation, which is, I must admit, different than what has been typically applied in multifamily projects in the past, to where, the recreational outdoor space or recreational space is a separate calculation outside of the required 20% interior landscaping. I provided a kind of a study, a case study that, and I just went with the, R43 zone. I think all of Deep has seen this. April, I would assume that you've shared this with staff also, to show that what the implication is with separating out the 20% landscaping from and having it stand alone from what the recreational space requirement would be. And we all know that the recreational space can be areas interior to a building. It can be, a rec room or a pool or something like that, but it can also be outdoor space, which could count towards landscaping, such as a dog run, an outdoor fitness area, a playground or a tot lot, or just open space areas for frisbee and sunbathing and things like that. So there's a lot of flexibility in there as to how the recreational space can be defined. If we take this just on an exterior standpoint, to where everything is exterior, which is probably, for projects that are smaller in nature, don't have a clubhouse, that you could probably apply the vast majority of the recreational space to, meaning you have a clubhouse that has a weight room and a common, recreational space, whatever else might be contained in there, that almost all projects will contain some kind of outdoor recreational space associated with it. So the application here, and I looked at this as from a project that I worked on, it was in the R18 zone. So I had just applied the same similar project to the R43 zone. And really what it came out to is that if you have all of your recreational outdoor space, say you don't have a clubhouse, and so all of your recreational space is exterior, you're essentially, in this case study, doubling the amount of landscape area or area devoted outside of buildings and parking and trash enclosures, which I didn't include in this case study. So that's another area that would need to be included. That you're essentially doubling the amount. So almost 40% of the site would need to be in landscape of some kind. And it just, the math doesn't add up. I chose the higher density zone because that is where we're going to get the most bang for the buck, number one. Number two, that's where we're going to realize the most residential units, which we so desperately need in the county. And and somebody show me that my math is wrong, but it would show that the project wouldn't be able to be done in this regard. Understanding that there would need to be some flexibility provided for, well, hey, there's a lot of competing aspects of the projects that they need to meet, all the parking requirements, they need to meet trash, they need to meet building, they need to meet density. But I think that even if we were to go to the lower density and we start lowering the heights, because I went with 4-story walk-ups as two of the buildings that were in this case study, which is kind of the newer standard right now we're finding in order to maximize or to minimize the footprint of the buildings themselves, still doesn't make, the math still doesn't work in this regard. So I forwarded this on to April. Hopefully you and staff have had a chance to review it, and we'd love to hear your thoughts.
I was able to review it. I understand that, that the math, there isn't any indoor calculation in there. And I understand that you wouldn't be able to do that project. And trust me when I say I understand that we were inconsistently applying the code and more so on the other side. I know that. I looked at this. I know more about this code than any other code that we have right now. I looked at it every which way I possibly could. It's not just that it states in the special uses. It's in the development code. It's number 9 is landscaping and 10 is rec space. And they easily could have put in there that, and should have and could have put in there that they could have used one to satisfy the other, and it wasn't said in there. And we have other places in which we state that one requirement can be satisfied by another, and it wasn't stated there. And it's not stated in the multifamily residential outdoor recreation area standards. And so I understand the dilemma, and I don't want you to think that I don't. I just, the code is clear, and we were not interpreting it correctly. And we're finding these inconsistencies, and we're trying to do the right thing, find the inconsistencies and make them not, so that we're not doing them inconsistently. And unfortunately, you know, this has that effect on the developments. And I understand that. I just don't know now. It's not unclear to me. We were interpreting it incorrectly. There are so many places, like 5 different places, where we could have said that one could satisfy the other, like landscaping areas required for stormwater management can be used to satisfy landscaping areas, even if it's inundated with surface water. We were very clear. We could have done that here in like 3 different locations, and we didn't.
So, I mean, sure. I don't want to get us into a battle of interpretations. I want to find solutions here, and I don't think that that's what should have been intended, especially given what we're trying to do here. I think this is an instance where, you know, maybe collectively we can push the council towards some sort of code action and do it separate and apart from the biannuals to try to get action on this sooner rather than later.
And you can use the wording that's in that land, that stormwater management. If that's what their intent is, it's already there. You could just use it. One can be used to satisfy the other.
So the reason the stormwater was is because it was later. So this code, although it's inconsistent, it has been interpreted that way for 20 years. So it has been interpreted the same way for 20 years, that one can satisfy one and also satisfy the other. It doesn't say you can't anywhere. It doesn't say you can, but it also doesn't say you can't. So jumping to the conclusion that they have to do it that way it's a 50-50 shot. You could throw it at a dartboard. It doesn't say you can't, and it doesn't say you can. I don't know that it's clear. I mean, Jamie made up a really good point when we first talked about it. It's like, just because you have to meet one standard doesn't mean it's 2 different sections, so you can meet them independently. They're not cumulative. It doesn't say anywhere it's cumulative.
But even in the development standard, let's see, where am I? Even in the development standard for, I wish I had it right in front of me. But my thing is, it's number 9 and 10. It's right next to each other. It's not even that. It says the landscaping shall be, you know, L1, and it's where it says it has to be to the L1 standard. And number 10 is you need to provide rec space. Or even in the recreational space code. In the recreational space code, and I know I don't want to make this, but even in the rec space code, it says that landscaping can be used to as a boundary between rec space and private and public uses. And there it could have said it.
Yeah, we're dealing with code that's like pretty old. And because it was never an issue, it was never addressed. Because it was interpreted consistently for over 20 years since I've been looking at it, and Mike's been looking at it as well. It's been the same. So why would we change it if it wasn't broken? So this is the first time it's been identified as an issue. So what I suggest is, if it isn't clear, right, you know what? I think it could really go either way. It doesn't say you can't use it, and it doesn't say you can. So by defaulting to the one that's more restrictive, that's inconsistent with the interpretation for the last 20 years, causes a significant hardship on developments that we're moving forward, and it negatively impacts affordable housing and so many other goals that the county is trying to do. So I don't disagree that you might have a different interpretation, and it's unclear. It is not clear. That I do disagree with. It is definitely not clear, If you think it's really clear and we think it's really clear but have different opinions, that means it's not clear. So what I suggest is let's clarify it, okay? But let's also put a moratorium. We need to not enforce this new interpretation. Let's put an emergency order or whatever we have to do to not do this so it doesn't impact projects in process. So if we can do that through a board action, we can request that. Maybe we make a deed motion to do that. I don't see why we couldn't do that. And let's get it fixed. But also, things have taken a long time. We just heard something earlier how we did a trial period and we're supposed to revisit it. It's been several years now. We never got back to it. We can't continue to say, yep, we'll address this later. We have so many of these policies that have had to go through biannual code changes that haven't, and they're big deals. And we can't continue to delay and delay on these. We need to do something to make sure that if there is something that comes up, that we have authority as like, you know, the director or somebody can do this and say, we're going to halt this because of the difference in opinion, and we're going to rewrite the code, and we're going to go with the interpretation that's historical. And the historical interpretation is not what the decision has been now. So that's, I guess, my suggestion, trying to find a solution instead of just throwing up roadblocks, because that's been a huge issue for the county, and that's what this board is here to prevent happening. You know, it's to break through those roadblocks, to cut through the red tape, to come up with a way that works and is constructive instead of just saying, nope, we can't do this, and we can't interpret it differently until we have a code change. Let's find a solution.
I don't want to be a roadblock. And I know it's been inconsistent, but trust me in my research when I also checked to make sure that there were times where it was interpreted the other way. And even if it, which I have, but even in the case, even if it wasn't, if we find something that has been interpreted incorrectly, it doesn't mean we don't fix it.
April, quick question. There are requirements, other landscape requirements, in the code. There's a requirement for a certain percentage of landscaping for most projects, all projects. And there are requirements for buffering and screening, and there are requirements for interior parking lot landscaping. None of those sections indicate that those specific landscape requirements can be used to meet the required percentage of on-site landscaping. None of them say that. None of them say you need to have on average one landscape island in your parking lot for every 7 stalls. It does not then say, and these landscape islands can be used to meet the on-site landscape requirement. There is a section that says parking lots need to be screened to a 5-foot wide L2 buffer. It does not then say this 5-foot wide L2 buffer can also be used to meet your on-site landscape requirement. So when you say one section says that the stormwater requirements, above ground stormwater requirements, can be met, now are you going to go through and apply that to every other section in the code? That seems exhaustive.
No, but and, I do think in your example, you're using landscaping and landscaping. You're saying yes. that would be why it doesn't have to specify it there. I
don't know. It says landscaping can be used to meet the outdoor recreational requirements for landscaping. What options do we have, April, to get this resolved, to get this changed? Have you checked with the PA's office to see if there is an opportunity or an option for us to present something to council and to get a council action? Jamie, do you know of anything that we could do in order to get this resolved sooner than a biannual amendment?
I mean, the county always has emergency, you know, authority to amend the code. They can pass something next week, in theory. They would have to hold a hearing, I think, within 60 days of that passage, but that would be the quickest solution there to address this.
Then I would suggest, with the board's approval that we draft a request for an emergency action by the board to get this, whatever it is, a new code language included in there. Similar to what I have said here, landscape area used to meet this particular code section above may also be counted towards meeting the minimum 20% landscape area as required in another section. That's what I would recommend that we do. Because okay, it's clear that everybody's kind of dug their heels in. And I think that we want everybody to be on the same page, have the same interpretation. I think that as Eric always says, there's going to be some unintended consequences even with this action. But at least in the interim, it takes care of the issue at hand.
Okay, so I'll take that as a motion, Mike, then.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, seconded by Mr. Gunther. Discussion.
I think it's the best resolution we can come up with, it sounds like, at this point in time. I think that, if the code was interpreted that these two need to be separate areas, we're going to find that a lot of apartments, projects, just these can't make it work with, let's say, R43 zone. Every developer wants 1.75 to 2 parking spaces per unit, or virtually everyone that truly knows what they're doing, and you're just not going to get there without the taller buildings aren't financially viable, certainly above 4 stories, and most people don't even want more than 3. So that's my 2 cents.
Okay, Eric, thoughts?
I think that's the best solution we're going to have right now.
Okay, with that, I'll call the question. Sherry and Seth, since you're not on camera, you get on camera, or I'll look for your yes, no. All those in
favor. Jamie, just one thing before you call the vote. I was curious, with Mike's proposal as far as how to fix it, is it better, like you just brought up, Mike, that, because it's specifically called out, is there going to be a concern that it's going to be taken to apply it in the same, for instance, the stormwater is specifically called out in the landscape section as being able to be used. Is there a better place that we should look at? Does it make more sense for it to be put into the recreation area standards or something like along those lines? Just to make sure that it's, I guess, more clear.
I've taken a look at that, Seth. And as I indicated, that there are other sections of the code associated with landscaping that don't specifically say that it can apply towards the on-site landscape percentage. I think then that we can go back to what April has indicated as the opening line to that particular section that states, in addition to other standards and requirements imposed by this title, all uses included in this chapter shall comply with the provision stated herein. I think it's more clear that the other landscape standards have been uniformly applied as meeting the on-site percentage, that should not be an issue. Now, I'm not saying that that's not a potential, but what I am saying is that this particular issue at hand in front of us right now needs to be addressed. And we can always then, if other issues come up along the way, if other code interpretations come up along the way that are outside of the historic interpretation, we can address it, cross that bridge when we get to it, or then if it's not such an emergency, included in a future biannual code amendment. That answer your question?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, with that, I'm gonna call the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Sherry, we need you.
Sherry.
Sherry.
She might have stepped away.
See her shoulder.
I think it's a Mary.
I think she's frozen.
Because we met a quorum, so even if she voted no, it would still pass.
Yeah, so, she can hear us. Like, have her blink. I can't see her.
Okay, she'll be coming back on. She's clicked off and clicked back on a couple of times.
Brent, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that I have a clear statement of the motion. So when I prepare my memo for the council, that I can state it clearly and correctly.
The motion, Brent, will be that Deeb recommends and will be submitting to County Council a request for an emergency ordinance to include, okay, here comes Sherry again, to include an additional code section in section 40-260-150B1 and 2, that the landscape area used to meet that those two particular sections may also be counted towards meeting the minimum 20% landscape area as required in section 40-220-020-C9. And I will provide a formal request. This is just the motion. I'll provide a formal request to the council for Deeb's review prior to submittal to, I would assume, Brent, that would then forward that to the council.
Correct. And then Sherry came back online. So Sherry, did you want an opportunity to vote on the motion?
I feel it's best to abstain since I missed half of it. Okay. And missed a lot of the discussion. Sorry about that.
No problem. I just want to make sure you had the opportunity. Okay. So the vote passes. What did I get? 6-1, 6-1 abstention. Okay, really appreciate it. We'll look forward to getting that to council and seeing if we can move that along and hopefully get to a good collaborative solution here rather than having each position with their heels dug in. So,
can I make a suggestion possibly just to look at? I'm not. But if you were looking at changing it, will you just look at 40-220-020?
40. Start. Can you say that again, April?
40-220-020.
Okay.
And then go to the development standards of C. And just take a look at 9 and 10, and just see if it might be easier to just add the wording to 9 or 10. But that's
220-020-C.
9 and 10.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So instead of including it in the landscape requirement section rather than the special use section.
The only reason I suggest that is because this is where it's telling you that you need to be the 20% L1 standard.
Okay.
But you can do what you want. This might be.
Well, I'll run it by our resident legal expert before we submit anything, and just to make sure that what we're proposing, and this is going to be reviewed by the PA's office anyway.
Yeah, we need to make sure that it solves the problem. So,
yep.
Okay, got it. With that, next item on the agenda is public comment. I believe Brandy is the only one here. Is it staff or Dee? So, hearing none. Next month's meeting, I know, Brent, you're going to look into seeing if we can do that in person. And I'm assuming that that something will get circulated here. Deciding that for fact, whether or not that happens or not, hopefully it does.
Yeah, I've already reached out to see if we can get the room scheduled. And I think the only real challenge is going to be the hybrid format, getting audio back to the remote participants and being able to record their input as well as the live recording in the meeting. So we'll have to figure that out. But the council's apparently figured out a way to do it, so we should be able to tag along with that.
Okay. Wonderful. And then is anybody dying for anything in particular for the May 5th agenda?
Other than do you have something in mind?
No. It's Cinco de Mayo, though, you know.
Only Jamie would think that.
I don't know. I think we should take a look at our work plan and see what's next on the list.
Okay. Well, let's take that offline. We'll work on maybe send an email around tomorrow about what you guys want to pick for session, and I'll work with Brent to get that scheduled, and hopefully we'll be in person mostly, but have the hybrid option available. And with that, see everybody next month.
Does Seth wanted me to address something next week or next month, right? Seth, what did you want me to look into?
Well, it was with regard to that alternative engineering process, but you know, like I mentioned, I don't think it's just a matter of renewing the prior version. I think we need to have a discussion about what it is that we're going to propose or the changes to it. And I don't know that it's the top of the priority list on our work plan. So I know code amendments are, you know, definitely higher than that. So thank you.
One other thing, everyone, last month, we've been collecting, and maybe we need to dust off our old notes, but we want to gather up what code amendments we'd like to see staff address and to send them to me, and I'll compile them and get them over to April. I haven't seen anything come through yet. I know that we were kind of incorporating some of those in the housing memo that Eric prepared. Maybe that's then covered. But if there's anything else, I'm going to query staff at Olson and query your own staff, see if there's anything else that we need to address outside of Scrivener's errors and things like that. And that way we can keep that process rolling too.
Yeah, Mike, there's a couple of code enforcement matters that I've been working on that Kevin's been really patient with me on, that I've had board buy-off on doing amendments with the majority of them, but they've been stalled obviously because the process hasn't moved on. So I'll maybe give you a call and we can talk about those ones offline.
That'd be great. Okay.
Okay. So with that being said, everybody have a great day, and we'll see you Cinco de Mayo. Jeff, I'll have something for you.
All right.
In person.
In person.
We'll go out afterwards.
Take care, guys.
Take care, everyone.